And I'm back. Locked in the bunker, shadows shaking. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake. Oh, it's good to be back in the hot seat, clappers. I've been away for a while. Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. I am back. Strap in. It's going to be a bumpy ride today. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. I'm going to do a bit of share and turn back time. Oh, my back. Sharing with you today all the games that we're going to talk about what's coming in with incoming! 4 exclamation marks. Oh, we might add a fifth to that this year. We'll hit the crowdfunding vibes with FOMO Mofo, sort of, and then we'll chat with the voices in my head before giving someone the clap. On with the show! Well, clappers, it's been, I want to say 3 weeks since we've chatted, 3 weeks since I've had my proper therapy session. I've laid down on the couch and spilled all my guts to you fine folks around the globe. Oh, where to go? I started with 2 weeks. We spent 2 weeks in Fiji. It was holiday time. It was middle of term, but we took the peanut. The peanut's only 9, so, right, who cares about school, right? So we took the peanut out of school, the fox peanut and I, we zipped off to Fiji. Fiji's our happy place. It's where we go anytime we have enough money to do so and a bit of time to just relax. And so we spent 12 glorious days in Fiji. It was my birthday while I was there. I got 6 dives in. I'm a bit of a scuba diver from time to time, and I do love the Zen. I say to my daughters all the time, it's the only place I can find in the whole world where there's no complaining, and there's no screeching, there's no asking for stuff. It's at the bottom of the ocean. It's just me and the bubbles. And it was amazing. It was amazing. We did 2 island trips. And I spent a lot of time not having to bear my own weight at these swim-up bars, which are everywhere. You know, the big signs everywhere say, do not enter the pool while intoxicated. The good news is you can get plenty intoxicated once you're in the pool. Apparently, they just don't want you to walk in while you're intoxicated. Good luck getting out. And, of course, back to work. Last week was back to work. Last weekend was my first weekend back in Australia after the time off. And, of course, if anyone's ever been away, which hopefully everyone's had that pleasure at least once in your life, you know the first couple of days back are mayhem. 974 loads of laundry. There's no food in the house. You know. So, this is my first opportunity. Back at the microphone. Thank you for your patience. I have missed you all. A lot going on. Oh my God. A lot going on since my last day here in the bunker with you. Let's talk games. Because games are the best part of, what's going on. So March 22nd was Dusty's birthday. So we had a celebration of Dusty's birthday. We had that at Super Trooper's house. We had a whole crowd around. And we played a lot of games. We played a lot of light to midweight games. Dustin and Super Trooper and I, typically when we get together, we play mid to heavyweight Euros. But, you know, we had some muggles in the house. And, you know, we want to be social. I mean, sort of. Not on my birthday. We'll talk about that later. But on Dustin's birthday, he wants to be social. He wants other people to feel welcome. He wants other people to feel like they're having a good time. So, we played some hits. We played Arboretum, which we hadn't played in a while. Arboretum is a great game. I'm not going to go into it. It's been around for years. I've talked about Arboretum a couple of times on the pod. Arboretum, I have a love-hate relationship with Arboretum. You know, the art's gorgeous. The gameplay's simple. But man, there's so much pain when you play it. Good pain. Don't get me wrong. Good pain. We played Critter Kitchen, which is a delight. Critter Kitchen is you know, one of Super Trooper's latest acquisitions from Cardboard Alchemy. We've talked about that again a couple of times on the pod in detail, so I'm not going to today. But Critter Kitchen is a delight. It's you know, you're subject to the luck of the draw and what you can do with it. Every round, if it's a table of 6, 5 people are groaning and one person's going, fuck yeah, because they were the only one that landed on a spot. They managed to actually get some bloody ingredients. We played Seven Wonders. Now, Seven Wonders has been around for a very long time. I actually have a copy of Seven Wonders because it's been around so long. Super Trooper bought the second edition. He said, hey, Hammers, have my first edition. Have my garbage. Not really. Well, it's not garbage. You know, but, it, you know, he wanted me to have his copy because, you know, selling secondhand games isn't very easy, and you don't get much for them, and certainly not for whatever it is, a 6-year-old copy of Seven Wonders. And I've never played my copy because, well, you need more than, you know, a couple of people to play Seven Wonders. So this was only my second game of Seven Wonders. My first was also at Super Trooper's house, probably 2.5 years ago. Seven Wonders is, it's not hard. It's not a hard game. There's not a lot going on. It's cards. Basically, it's Sushi Go with frills. You know, you take a card, you pass it around. You take a card, you pass it around, and you see what happens. And look, it's great. Seven Wonders, I really enjoyed. I would like to play Seven Wonders again, and I think it shines really, really well at high player counts. It doesn't lag. You know, I'm not going to go deep into Seven Wonders. Seven Wonders has been around, you know, longer than religion, so I'm not going to go deep into it. But I also had the pleasure of introducing a few more people to the delight that is Bonanza Dahlias. Again, we've talked about this a few times. I'm not going to do it in detail because I have a lot of games to talk about today. So I'm skipping over some of the stuff we've talked about a lot of times. But I managed to introduce some new people to Bonanza Dahlias, which I love. And Bonanza Dahlias, I think we played at 5 at Dusty's birthday party. And it was fantastic. It is a fantastic game. Bonanzas with the anthropomorphic beans is the same game with insane art. Bonanza Dahlias is gorgeous art. We love, in this house, we love Bonanza Dahlias. The Fox and the Peanut love Bonanza Dahlias. I have a funny feeling if I could actually get Sparkle to the table, she would love this. She doesn't play games. Games are for nerds. She doesn't play games, and that's okay. I still love her most days. But one of the highlights of Dusty's Party is a game that I have only really played in this house with maybe the Peanut, and I think the Peanut and the Fox and I have played. We've only sort of played it at 3 max, and I think we played it at 5 at Dusty's Party, and that's Kites. Now, Kites is, and when it's interesting, it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had a little bit of time after a game day, and I said to Super Trooper, I'm going to teach you how to play Kites. And he went, I said, no, hang on. I said, you know, and he was groaning because I said, Kites is my only, and I think it is my only, other than like Paku Paku, whatever. It's my only real-time game, and it's a real-time co-op game. So in Kites, you've got a deck of cards, and on the cards, you've got pictures of kites, colorful kites, and in the top corner, you've got two suits, well, two colors and two suits. There are 5, I think, red, blue, green, yellow, orange, purple, whatever. There's a number. And on the table, I think you've got 6 sand timers, each one matching the suit, and there's a white one. And so you get dealt a hand of cards, and you can't look at the cards, and at some point, whoever's starting the game flips the white sand timer, everyone looks at your cards, and then it's on. And the first person to go will play their card, and whatever suit is in the top, if it's a blue and a red, you flip the blue and the red sand timer. And then they draw a card. The next person in line cannot play until you've drawn a card. So the next person will play, and they've got, I've got a purple. So I'll flip the purple sand timer. So, and this goes round and round and round and round. And it seems very, you know, the first half of the game, people's like, this is fine. This is fine. I should note as well, in order to flip the white sand timer, you've got to play any single color card. So any card that has one color on it, you can flip the white sand timer. Each timer has a varying amount of sand in it. So the red's the fastest. I think the red runs in about 12 seconds. I think the purple's the white's the longest. It runs in about 25 seconds. And the idea is you've got to burn all the cards in the deck as a group in order to win the game. So we did not win. Spoiler, you don't win very many games of Kites. Kites is something where you start the game and it's fine and it's fine and it's all going fine. And then about halfway through the game, you look up and like 4 timers are almost out of sand simultaneously and the table goes, oh fuck balls. And all of a sudden they're shouting, somebody has to play red. Oh my God, who's got an orange? Who's got an orange? It's like a stock market floor and it is wild. And we had so much fun. So we played a base game of Kites because there's more. There are 3 different extra cards you can throw in, which are so awesome. This is where Kites gets really awesome. So you can play, for example, airports. So in the deck, there will be, I think, 5 cards that have an airplane on them. And if you draw the airplane card, you have to play it on your very next turn. And so the airplane card, it represents an airplane flying overhead. It's loud. You can't talk. So you play the airplane card, and then, because of course you have your play stack in front of you. It's not a communal discard. You play the card in front of you, and then you draw a card. No one at the table can speak until you've played another card over that airplane. Okay, so all of a sudden, you've gone from this, oh my God, who's got purple? Who's got purple? The white timer! The white timer! Plane! And you play the plane card, and it's dead silence at the table, and it's panic. It is abject panic to get round so you can talk again. Kites is a blast. It's an absolute blast. It looks like a whole lot of not too much in a box, but don't let it fool you. They've done a reskin last year. I saw it at PAX based on Fireworks. I can't remember what it's called. It's exactly the same game, but it's with fireworks instead of kites. It's the whole notion of keeping the fireworks going or keeping the kites up in the air because you're playing different bits of wind. Kites as a group, you know, it really shines at 4 and 5. It's great at 3. It's absolutely great at 3. The Pina and I think we've, over the last 2.5 years, we've won maybe 3 games of kites with no extras. We haven't put the storms or the cross lines or the airplanes in. We've just played base game and we've managed to win 2 or 3 games. And I'll tell you, when you win a game of kites, when you know kites and you've played kites, it is jubilation deluxe. So kites for me was one of the highlights of Dustin's birthday. And one of the other highlights for Dusty's party is a game I've only just recently acquired, and it was only my second game of it. And that was Babylon. So I played Babylon at Dusty's birthday celebration with Dusty and Lou. Now, Lou doesn't play a lot of games because, you know, she's busy. She's a young adult, has a job, and is going to college, and, you know, has her own life. Ugh, your own life. But she'd come to the party. One, because she's a big fan of, you know, Super Trooper and Fam. But two, you know, she likes the crowd. She likes the crowd. So she came. And as I think the last game we played that day was Babylon. So Babylon, I know I've talked about, I'll just do it very briefly. Babylon is, it's a tile layer, but it's in 3D. So you're popping a tile out and then you're putting little 3D plastic pieces on it and you're building upwards in 3 levels. And I think, I wouldn't say loved it, but Dusty and Lou really, really liked this game, right? Because you've got to draft stuff out of a market, and you've got a plan, and there's little icons, and it's brain burny, but not in a calico-y way. I mean, kind of. You've got deep limitations on what you can put and where, but you're until late game. Like late game, you end up painted into a corner. If you've not planned for it, your last turn is like, well, I got nowhere to put this tile because literally you have nowhere to build it. You've got nowhere to put it because you haven't planned enough. But Babylon, if you haven't seen Babylon, go have a look. Babylon is fantastic. It's tactile. You end up with this beautiful construction in front of you at the end of the game that is stunning to look at, and it's great. Babylon unfolds in front of you, and it looks like a, oh, this is fine, this is fine, this is fine. And you get about 30% of the way in, and I think I've said this before, and you're like, oh, can we just start again? Because I have made some grievous errors. And it's great. I had a great time. So that was the 22nd. And then after that, the very next day, we flew off to Fiji. We had our time in Fiji. We took a few games with us because it's rainy season in Fiji. It's, you know, it's the tropics and it rains literally every day. And who gives a shit because it's 30 degrees and it's beautiful and you're in a pool anyway. So we took a few games. We didn't play many because we were so flat out just relaxing, you know. The Pina and I hopped on an ATV and we did this ATV trip. It's like a four-wheel bike if you don't know what an ATV is, and went to these like volcanic mud pools and you rub your whole body down in mud. Then we jumped in hot springs, which sounds like a punish in the tropics, but it was fantastic. And we hiked to the top of a mountain and we ripped down 5Ks of beach. And she'd never been on anything like this before. The Peanut's 9. She's on the back of this bike. And we, you know, we're roaring down the road to get where we're going at like 70 Ks an hour. And I lean over and I go, are you all right back there? And she goes, Dad, can you go any faster? I'm like, oh my God. Don't tell Mom. And we had such a good day. Such a good day. It was just so good. The fox checked herself into a spa. She got a massage and facial and... It was a great day. So good. Anyway, we were full of doing stuff like that. And of course, I was diving, you know, I did 3 full days of diving where I did 2 dives a day. And we did 2 island trips, which were glorious. And the rest of the time, we just spent on the little local bus, going down to the marina, having little lunches, having, you know, little snacks poolside. Oh, testing the limits of my liver. Oh, whoa. But yeah, it was fantastic. We were in Fiji, but we did play a couple of games. And I want to talk about 2. One we've talked about a little bit in the past because Super Trooper and I got to play it at the Board Game Barbecue Game Day most recently. And so I introduced the Fox to Force Shuffle. So Force Shuffle's a little tableau builder. And I know we've talked about it before. I'll just do the fast forward version. Super Junior and I both played this game. And we came out the back end of it going, oh, that was interesting. And I made the comment of, I wouldn't be surprised if one of us owned this game by the end of the year. And Super Junior went, nah, I've got Castle Combo and you've got Earth. And this is like in the middle of both of those. And to be honest, I think I'd rather play Earth. I'm like, oh, okay. So anyway, 10 days forward from there, I went out and bought it because it was on Amazon. It was on sale with one of the expansions. And I just went to stuff it. It's like, it's not an expensive game. It's like $30. So I picked it up. And it was really easy to travel to Fiji with because it's really just a deck of cards and a very small board. And to be honest, you could play it without the board if you wanted to travel, you know, because the board is really just this discard market. And I introduced the Fox to Forest Shuffle. Meanwhile, the day before I'm leaving for Fiji, Super Trooper sends me a message going, oh, just so you know, Forest Shuffle is on sale on Amazon. So I've bought it. And I went, oh, twinsies, we both own Forest Shuffle. He went, oh. I'll cancel that order. So anyway, he canceled the order because we try very hard not to double up on games because we only live 5 minutes apart. And between us, you know, if we don't buy the same game, we max out our capabilities because I'm happy to loan him anything. He's happy to loan me anything except Rococo because Rococo is Buttercup's pride and joy and doesn't leave the house. And you have to play in cotton gloves with a face mask and a face shield on and a hazmat suit because if you leave one spot on Rococo, you will be banned from the house for all time. So Rococo doesn't get loaned out, but just about anything else is up for grab. So anyway, I introduced the Fox to Force Shuffle. With Force Shuffle, you're going to play a card. It's a tree. And then around that tree, you can play a card at the top, the bottom, the left and right with little creatures and animals and bugs and butterflies and whatever else. And at the end, you score based on how they link up together. It's a gorgeous game, for one. It's absolutely beautiful to look at. And the gameplay is really breezy. The scoring takes... There's an app that I've discovered that you're supposed to be able to take a photo of your tableau and it scores. Super Trooper and I tested it out this last weekend. It doesn't work very well in that we found that there's quite a discrepancy between what the app was saying and the actual score when we did it manually. So watch this space. So it takes a while to score. And to be honest, by the time you finish playing, like when the Fox and I played, we played a few times when we were away. We didn't even care about the score at the end. It's just the experience of sitting at the table at the end of the day with a glass of wine and making this beautiful little forest. And the score is the score. Like, whoever wins, who cares, right? You know, it's like, it's not like we're gambling sexual favors or something on the game. It's like, well, whoever wins, wins. But the experience of building, and it's gorgeous to look at. The art is fantastic. And your tableau, when you're done, it's beautiful. And it's fun. Force Shuffle, highly recommend it. I bought one of the expansions, which basically just introduces a new plant type and a few new animals. It's another three dozen cards that you just shuffle through. It does need sleeving, and I'll tell you why, because if you don't shuffle the bejesus out of it, your games get very sort of slanted in certain directions. Because at player count, different player counts, you're also pulling cards out. And so if they're not shuffled really well, you're going to pull out all the bears, or you're going to pull out all of one tree. So it does need sleeving, and it's one of those weird sizes. It's one of those weird, it's not a standard American, so I may have some sleeves in my chest of sleeves that fit, but we'll see. It needs sleeving. Because Force Shuffle needs to be shuffled to death. Force Shuffle, that's by Kosh, art by Tony Yobe and Judy Paella, published by Lookout Games. I didn't do that for the previous games, my apologies. It's Sunday morning, I'm only at my second coffee. I'm trying to bake two loaves of bread and bake breakfast for the peanut, and. So, that was Fiji. We played a few other games, but, oh, the other one I want to talk about in Fiji, we played River Valley Glassworks. So River Valley Glassworks is newly released. And it's another beautiful game to look at. It's got Andrew Bosley art. So it's got these sort of Everdell kind of vibes. The art's really, really gorgeous. And in River Valley Glassworks, you have this river in front of you that is populated with river stones. And you've got a little player board. And on your player board, you have these storage spaces for these beautiful pebbles. We're all woodland creatures that we have glassworks. I don't know why there's so many glassworks in the river, right? How many glassworks do you need? Like a market economy can't really sustain five glassworks in one region. I mean, from a business standpoint, it's clearly insane. But that aside, it is super cute to look at. It's a gorgeous game on the table. And I've got the deluxe version, so it's got these beautiful acrylic overlays for the river. And so River Valley Glassworks is one of those that I think when I teach to people, I'm going to open with, all right, saddle up, because we're going to play this twice. Because the game is over before you know it. And I think you need to go through scoring fully before you can actually play the game properly. That was my discovery and my feelings with it. Because the Fox and I played River Valley Glassworks, and I was learning from the rule book. It's not a big rule book. It's only about three or four very little pages explaining the mechanic. And we played it and we got to the end, and she looked up and she went, "That's it? That's the game?" I went, "Mm." Because you finish it and you kind of go, is that a game? Is that... And so I went, look, let's play it again. So we did. We wiped it. We said it. We played it again. And in the second game, we went, aha, okay. So River Valley Glassworks, you are basically, you've got a little pool of pebbles, which are your payment pebbles. And the river's full of pebbles that you will be buying with your payment pebbles. And what you're going to do is you're going to drop them. You're going to throw a payment pebble in the river. And you're going to take a pebble out, or a series of pebbles, that are either side. And I may get this wrong because it's been several weeks since we played. So if you throw a pebble in to a space, you can take the pebble on either side that is either the same shape or the same color. Okay? Not both. It can be both, but it's got to be either. So you're basically throwing a pebble in and you're taking one from either the adjacent spaces that's the same shape or the same color. The pebbles, there are five different shapes and four different colors or something. Okay, that's the numbers are irrelevant. Well, they're not irrelevant when you play the game, but they're irrelevant to my story here. And so you've got a little pool of payment pebbles, which you collect if you're out of payment pebbles. You can collect all the pebbles that are down at the end of the lake. So you've got a river with five sections, and down the end you've got a lake that has five pebbles in it. So you can always refill your little pool with whatever's there, and they're a random draw. So then you pay a pebble, you take a pebble, and you throw the pebble in your little storage space. That's the game. And you get points based on a number of different set collections. So you get points based on how many rows you fill from the bottom up. You get points based on how high your columns are. And that's pretty much it. So where's the puzzle? Okay, so the puzzle is the game's over as soon as someone's little storage space has 17 pebbles in it. And sometimes you will be buying more than one pebble. So you can buy in a space, if there are three pebbles that are all the same shape, you can buy all of them and you've got to slot them in. The game can be over before you even think it started. I think our first game of River Valley Glassworks, because we didn't understand the puzzle, was like 8 minutes. We were like, oh, let's buy, let's slot. We'll buy, slot. Oh shit, the game's over. Well, that's it. The second game, you spend a lot more time with your payment pebble in your hand going, okay, if I buy that pebble and that's going to slot in there, if I buy that, I've got to take those two. And then, oof, oh, and then I've got to make that work. You spend a lot more time thinking about where those pebbles go. So I think the best way, and this is what I'm going to try, is I'm going to sit with people and go, right, just saddle up. I'm going to show you what a turn looks like. Just take your turns. Don't think about it. Just take your turns, and then we're going to score, and then we're going to play again. Because your first game's kind of a wash. You get to the end of your first game, and you really do look up and go, that can't be the whole game, because it's over in, if you're not planning and thinking, it's over in literally minutes. That said, I think once you get to stage two of River Valley Glassworks, when I say stage two, I mean your second game where you actually sort of go, ah, click. I think it's clever. It's clever because anyone can play it. I think you can have a great game with your 10-year-old daughter. I think you can have a great game with your mates around the table. I think it's a great game to have at the end of the night. I think it's a great game to have when you want a puzzle, but you don't want to be laboring over that puzzle too much. It's also beautiful. It's beautiful to look at. There's a couple other mechanics in there, you know, like when you take a stone, the river activates and the panels shift like the river's pushing stones down the river kind of thing. It's a clever bit of game. And it is beautiful to look at. I know I've said that five times. It is beautiful. It's tactile. It's fun. And it's not something that's, again, I think play it twice. Play it twice before you really sort of understand the game. And then I've also got this little expansion, which is still sitting in the box. And I think it adds a little asymmetry, a little goals, that sort of stuff, which I think will be really great. I think once you've played two games and you actually get the mechanic to bring those out. So I'm looking forward to getting those on the table. So that is River Valley Glassworks, recently released by Adam Hill, Ben Pinchback, Matt Riddle, art, of course, by Andrew Bosley, and published by Allplay. Very, very much enjoyed it. I planned this quite cleverly. We did 12 days in Fiji. I got back on a Thursday. Friday, the Fox is back to work. The Peanut's back to school. And the Fox looks at me and goes, what? You're not going back to work? I'm like, what? What kind of lunatic gets back from holidays on a Thursday and decides they're not taking the Friday off? That's insane. So we had Friday game day at Super Troopers, which I haven't been able to be a part of for quite some time because, you know, adulting, job, that sort of stuff. One star, do not recommend. So we had a game day at Super Troopers, and which was a bit of a ritual for some years when my work schedule was a lot more flexible. And I do miss it. I miss it a lot. You know, this whole working for a living. I think my next job, whatever, whenever that is definitely going to have to be part-time. You know, working Fridays is for suckers. So we played one of my favorites. And I really, when I say one of my favorites, this is probably a top 20 game for me currently. I really, really enjoy it. That's Darwin's Journey. Darwin's Journey, we've talked about a few times here. So again, I'm not going to belabor it. It's worker placement. It's a very sharp, tight worker placement. Money and resources are so tight in this. So, so tight. It's beautiful to look at. It's a Simone Luciani game. Nestor Mangione and art by Paolo Voto. It's published by Thundergriff. Super Trooper has the almost deluxe version. There's one component that he thought came with the all-in and it didn't. It is these beautiful colored actual I think magnifying lenses, so when the Oceania expansion releases, I'm pretty sure he's going to take that and he's going to finally get the fully playable version when that comes out. And so Darwin's Journey, I love. I'm not going to go into it in huge detail because I've talked about it at least twice, but after that we played Point City, which Super Trooper brought out in the day, and inside I kind of died a little inside. I just went, ugh. And that's largely because my only experience with the city games, I played Point Salad. I played a couple of games of that a couple of years ago. And Point Salad is fine. It's fine. It's not much of a game. You know, you draw a card, you flip a card, you play a card, whatever. You know, you're set collecting. It's fine. It's fine. I don't hate it. I would never go, let's play Point Salad, you know. But Point City is a different beast, and I really enjoyed Point City. So Point City, again, it's you're building a little bit of a tableau in front of you based on the cards you're drafting, but you got a little more agency over which cards you're getting, and the cards do a little more and they interplay a little more. I'm not going to go into details because, to be honest, perfectly frank, I don't remember enough of the details to share them with you, but I can tell you I really enjoyed Point City. Point Galaxy is coming out sometime, at which I looked at, and I just, when it was on crowdfunding, I just went, Point City, Point Salad in space? No, thank you. But if it's more Point City in space, I will probably have a look at that in retail because I really enjoyed Point City. I thought it was clever. I thought it was about a half hour, 25 minutes to half hour. It's a 5 minute teach, 25 minute game. And I really enjoyed Point City. I think, you know, the art was cute. I think the gameplay was cute. It's Molly Johnson, Robert Melvin, Sean Stankiewicz. I'm sorry, Sean, that last name is awful. Art by Dylan Mangini, published by Flatout Games. Point City, again, tableau builder. It's way, way better than Point Salad. And after that, we had a little bit of time to kill, a couple of hours, and we got The Crew, The Quest for Planet Nine, back to the table. Now, Dusty, Super Trooper, and I have been working on The Crew for about a year and a half. Ooh, we've had some really huge successes with The Crew. We've had some really dismal afternoons with The Crew. When I say dismal, we've still enjoyed it. Just no successes. So I think, I can't tell you how many games of The Crew we've played. Probably, I would say, it would probably be 50 games of The Crew, maybe. And we're about halfway. I think we've crossed the halfway mark. There are 50 different scenarios you've got to play in The Crew, and I think we're up to 26. So we probably got another year or two on The Crew. It's a great thing to throw down on the table if you've got a, you know, half an hour or an hour. A game of The Crew can last a minute and a half, as we've discovered, or it can last 5 or 6 minutes. And so in a half hour, you can easily get sort of 5 or 6 games out. You might not get 5 or 6 progressions, but you can get 5 or 6 games. And The Crew is a blast. The Crew is a trick taker. It's cooperative. Go look up The Crew. The Crew's been around a long time. It's a highly lauded game in the world of gaming. It's by Thomas Singh, art by Marco Ambruster, and published by Cosmos. Comes in a tiny box. It's literally a deck of cards and a little cardboard rocket ship and a couple of chips. It's a piece of cake to teach. And even if you've never really played Trick Takers, you can get your head around it pretty quickly. The Crew's fantastic. From there, well, my birthday happened. We were in Fiji. We celebrated Dusty's birthday before I left. And so I had I'll call it a celebration. A lot of people saying, are you going to have a party? Are you going to have a party? And I'm like, ugh. Don't get me wrong. I'm hospitality. I worked in hospitality my whole life. I love a party, right? I absolutely love a party. I love getting people around. I love cooking for groups. I love entertaining. I love the noise. I love it all. I'm not yet successful in having a party that I love that involves board games. Largely because if the party's for me and I have everybody at the party, I don't get to play the games I want to play. So there was a lot of sort of umming and ahhing. Do I have a birthday party? Do I not? Do I have a, like, because last year I turned 50. I had a big whiz bang party. We, you know, revealed the bunker. We had games upstairs, downstairs. It was wonderful. This year I said, no, you know what I want? This is what I want. I want to play the Blighted Reach. Arcs the Blighted Reach. I want to play it all in one day. And we got, you know, Super Trooper Dusty around the table. So it was just three of us. And we started the Blighted Reach at about 9:30 in the morning. And we finished, at dinner time. So it was a little longer than I think I was anticipating, which I think is fine. I think a game of Arcs played smoothly is probably only about 2 hours for 2.5 for a full game of Arcs. In the Blighted Reach, you're playing three games of Arcs back to back. But they're not full length games. You know, a game of Arcs is normally five chapters. The first two games you play in the Blighted Reach are only three chapters each, and the last one is, I think, four. So in theory, it should be less time than playing three normal games of Arcs. Now, I think part of the reason it took so long is there's a lot more going on in the Blighted Reach. Now, let me be clear. I really like Arcs. I won't go so far as to say I love Arcs yet. I think I could love Arcs, but I really like it. And so in the Blighted Reach, you start off with these fate cards, which are basically like your faction. And at the end of each game, depending on how you've landed and how you've done, you can choose to keep it or you are forced to change to another one. And you're drawing two more. And they are wild. Like Arcs the Blighted Reach by game three, it got wild. We had a lot of edge cases. And to be honest, I think a lot of those edge cases were because we misplayed a major rule in the Blighted Reach. When I say misplayed, there was a concept in the game that we didn't fully grok from the start, which would have changed meaningfully how the game unfolded and probably would have streamlined it a lot. Because one, it would have streamlined a lot of these edge cases that we came up against. So there were some points we get to an edge case and go, what do we do with this? And it would be stop and it's 10 minutes of trying to find the rule and try to understand it. And don't get me wrong, that was our own fault. Right? Like, we just missed something about the Blighted Reach having to do with how the Prime Regent controls the Imperial factions. Anyway, we could talk about the Blighted Reach for an hour on its own. And plenty of other podcasters and YouTube channels will do that, and I don't want to do that. But this is something I want to do for my birthday. I wanted to play the Blighted Reach campaign. We did. We got to the end of it, and I think I don't think any of us knew what to think at the end of it, just because it was such a big day of what do we do with this and what do we do with that and what does this look like? And I think if we were to do it again, it would be 10 times better an experience because it would be more streamlined. It'd be a lot faster through the decision spaces. There's a lot of take that in Arcs, right? There's a lot of take that. But because that's the game, it doesn't feel mean to me. I don't think, you know, anyone at the table felt like, oh, well, screw you for taking my stuff. Because it does. That's the game, right? We're not that kind of gamer. Did I like the Blighted Reach? I don't know. I think so. It's sort of where I'm landing with it. And I think it needs two more. I need two more runs of the Blighted Reach. One, because I need to go through it again with the team with full understanding of the rules. And two, you can play it and pack it away and play it and pack it away and play it and pack it away. I'm not sure whether it would be better or worse if you played it on three different days versus playing it all in one day. So, you know, I think playing it all in one day for me seems more sensible because you're in the rhythm, you've internalized the rule set. But at the same time, playing it, putting it away, and playing it, putting it away, like at the end of the day, it felt like a lot of Arcs. And I think part of that's our fault, you know, because we played Arcs for like 9 hours. And I think we got to the end, we got to dinner, and I think we were like, okay, can we put Arcs away now? And I mean, don't get me wrong, Arcs is a triumph of game design. It's an absolute triumph of game design. I am not sure whether I'm going to love the Blighted Reach or not at this point. But I want to do it two more times. I want to do it once more, probably with the same boys, and go, hey, let's just buckle up and do it properly. and once where it's I'm going to split it up. And I think when I'm going to split it up, if you're coming to PlayCon in July, the Board Game Barbecue's big convention, I'm going to try and schedule an ARCs campaign where we play a game for first game of the day every day. So you sign up and we're going to play, first game of the day on Friday will be ARCs game one, first game of the day on Saturday will be ARCs game two, first game of the day on Sunday will be ARCs game three, and we'll break it up that way. And so I'm hoping to find, three other souls who really want that experience, and we can do that together. So if you're coming to PlayCon and you want in on that, send me a message, and we'll hook that up. I think it's great. And so that was pretty much the whole day for my birthday. I made a pot of Texas style chili and a pot of mac and cheese because that's how I roll. And I made cornbread because the fox loves cornbread. And that was dinner. We had cornbread and chili and mac and cheese. And that was it. That was the end of the day. It was a long day. Well, it wasn't quite the end of the day. Super Trooper and fam left, and Dusty and I, had a little bit left in the tank. So we played a game of Spectacular. I know I've talked about Spectacular recently. Spectacular, I played with the Fox and the Peanut, and they absolutely loved it. I did a teach with Dusty on Spectacular, and I was teaching his teaching. He's like, "Oh, that seems pretty straightforward." And then I got to the last bit of the teach, went, and then this is going to happen. He went, "Oh, I like that." So of course, Dusty dusted it. When I say dusted it, he mathed out the whole game from, I think he started at the end of the game and worked forward. And I think he cleaned my clock by about 119 points. But I had a great game. I had a great game. I had a great game teaching it. I love watching him work, when there's no pressure and there's nothing. This is the last game of the day. And, we're having one more drink, and I had a great time. Spectacular is a really fun game. I think it plays five. And because it's simultaneous play, I think it would be a blast at five, because I think one of the mechanics in Spectacular is after your turn, you pass your little tray of resources to the left and it's gone. And I think trying to math out your whole or look forward around the table as to what's coming your way is going to be that one step out of reach for most of the table. And to be honest, when I play, I play and I have a quick look and I play and I just hope for the best. And that's me. That's me, because I don't. There's a threshold of investment of brain power for games like that that then start to encroach on my personal enjoyment. Whereas I know Dusty gets personal enjoyment out of that puzzle, and I love watching his brain work. There's sometimes I'm playing, and I'm like, "Oh man, like, oh man, oh, I love you, man, but can you please take a turn?" And there's some games like the Spectacular game, I'm like, "I don't care. I don't even care. Take your time." And then, turn's finished. And he's like, "Hey, just one more thing. Can I just change my mind?" I'm like, "Bro, you fill your boots. Like, I don't even care." So we had a great game of Spectacular. I lost by 9 million points, but it was my birthday celebrations. It was just the three of us and Buttercup, and their daughter Beelzebubbles came over, who's the Peanuts' bestie, and they ran around and jumped in the pool and did crazy stuff all day, and it was a blast. A couple more to go. As I said, it's been a while, clappers. It's been a while. So I am delighted to announce that I have been playing Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. Huzzah! The clouds part and the sun shines down and the flags are on the ramparts. So, I am a mad Too Many Bones fan. I am a mad Skyrim, Oblivion, Morrowind fan. And so, yeah, I got back from Fiji and there was my 16 kilo, what's that, 35 freedom units for those of you that are in Tariff land, box waiting for me, and it was a massive box, a massive box. And the wonderful thing about Chip Theory Games is there's no punching, there's no sleeving, the cards are PVC, there's no sleeving. You basically open it up, you unwrap everything, and it's pretty much ready to go. So I got down in the bunker the day after my birthday games, and I got, "Okay, let's get Elder Scrolls out." So we got it out, got it sorted, got all the parts out. It says, "We recommend you play on a 2 foot or 3 foot by 4 foot table." And I'm like, "Yeah, I think mine's like 3.5 feet by 6 feet." And holy shitballs. Whoo! It's a beautiful thing though. So if you play Too Many Bones, I am not going to spend the next half hour talking about Elder Scrolls, because otherwise that will be the entire podcast. I will probably unpick it in a little more detail with my personal experiences a little bit later on in another episode, maybe, or I might just move on. But in Elder Scrolls, it's basically Too Many Bones with Skyrim thrown on top. But Skyrim's not just thrown on top, it imbues every single part of the game. When I say Skyrim, I'm talking Elder Scrolls, obviously. Skyrim's the most recent and the one I've played the most, because then you've got Skyrim, the 10-year anniversary, and two or three times a year I'll get back on the Xbox and play Skyrim for a couple of weeks, because it's like putting on my favorite pair of boots. So in Elder Scrolls, you are basically rolling dice, you're building characters, and it all starts with this character creation, which actually makes me feel like I'm at that loading screen, choosing my race, choosing my class, choosing my starting skill. It is spectacular. And unlike Too Many Bones, you know, I think Too Many Bones is the kind of thing where I think if you had two people that were in the same frame of mind, I think it would be a great game. But I've said this before, by and large, I think chip theory games are solo games, even though they're not branded that way. Too Many Bones for me is a wonderful game. I think it's, I would play it at two, but because the combat in Too Many Bones is quite abstracted, you're playing on a, you know, a 4x4 mat, and it's really just, it's a positional abstract for combat, and you're rolling dice and planning out your puzzle. It's a resource attrition puzzle during that combat. Elder Scrolls is not. You know, in Too Many Bones, you roll a die and it's gone. You don't get it back, you know, until the end of combat, until the end of the battle. In Elder Scrolls, you roll a die, you use the die, it goes into a cooldown track, which you can actually advance and grow through the course of the game. And after each turn, you get a certain number of dice back. So how you spend your dice is absolutely critical in how you plan your forthcoming turns, because the order in which you spend them is the order in which you're going to get them back. I started off Elder Scrolls, I played a two-handed game. Elder Scrolls is played over basically three sessions. Each session is supposed to take, you know, 2 to 3 hours, depending on the people and whatever else. My first Elder Scrolls session took 4 hours, largely because there was a lot of rules reference and whatnot. I played two-handed, I got to the end of session one, I got absolutely creamed at the end of session one by the end of session one boss. And I went, okay, well, that's my learning. And I put it away. And I created another single character. So I'm currently playing Elder Scrolls True Solo. And I'm playing a single character. And I am adoring it. It has that same feel when you're playing an Elder Scrolls game, where you start off and you're out in the game and you're swinging your one sword going, tink. And you can't do a lot. And then 3 hours in, you're like, oh, swing a sword, cast a spell, throw a bomb, duck, roll, weave. I mean, in Skyrim, there's none of that. You're still just swinging left hand, swinging right hand, and shouting. The combat's pretty low tech. But what I'm saying is you've got a lot more combatastic things you can do. And by the time you spend 2 hours or 3 hours in Elder Scrolls, you are this beast of a machine that is carving through swaths of bad guys. I got to the end of session one of my second playthrough. I set session one, set the boss battle up. I won't say it was a breeze, but it was complicated. There's a lot going on, and you can look at it and go, right, this is how I want to approach this. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to get through it. And woo, huzzah, got through it. So I cannot wait to play session two of my next playthrough. And I think this is the kind of thing that I think the guys will love. You know, I think we get the likes of, you know, Battleships and Super Trooper to the table. I don't know if Dusty's much of an Elder Scrolls fan, but I get the funny feeling that Super Trooper and Battleships will probably play this. And it's the kind of thing, the save system is spectacular. Your little neoprene mat that you're playing your character with, it clicks into its own little case and holds everything, all your chips, all your dice, all your little pegs, exactly where you left them, and it goes back in the box. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Hats off to Chip Theory. Elder Scrolls is an outstanding addition to the stable of games. Easily the best game they've made, and not a solo game. It will play solo, and I'd be happy to play it. I mean, looking at Chip Theory, I mean, I don't want to make this a Chip Theory episode, and I've talked about this in the past. I think Too Many Bones, I would play it with another person. Too Many Bones is a one-and-done thing where you set it up, you play, it's, you know, 3 hours, and you get to the bad guy, and you're done. I would play it with other people, I think, no problem. I don't think that it necessarily makes the game better. I think it's Too Many Bones, I often play two- or three-handed solo, and it's a fantastic puzzle. Cloudspire, which is, you know, their sleeper cult hit. I love Cloudspire, and people either adore Cloudspire or they've never heard of it. Cloudspire is a tower defense game. The solo in Cloudspire is absolutely outstanding, because basically you're playing against all the different factions and their action programming. And I actually think Cloudspire on a 1v1 would be awesome. And I think it's the kind of thing that Dusty would love, because it's all the math. Right, and you're basically stacking up for each turn. You go, and this is what I'm deploying, and it's a tower defense. And then you basically set it all up, you queue it up, and then the round starts, and they go out, and you just follow the instructions to reconcile what you've pre-programmed, and you basically watch it unfold on the table, and it's outstanding. And I think Cloud Spire could be amazing. I've only ever played it solo, but I think it could be amazing in a 1v1. Burn Cycle is 100% a solo game. I think Burn Cycle with two people is like trying to play what's the ocean battler that I love, Nemo's War. I'm trying to play Nemo's War with two people, right? I just think, why? Burn Cycle as a solo is superb. It's a superb game. I mean, Burn Cycle, people, again, unlike Cloud Spire, where people either love it or they never heard of it, Burn Cycle, people either love it or they fucking loathe it. Like, that is the shittest thing I've ever played. Burn Cycle is awesome. Honestly, Burn Cycle is awesome as a solo game. It is absolutely spectacular as a solo game. And the theme and the gameplay. And my deepest hope right now for Chip Theory is right now they're doing their last campaign for Cloud Spire. It's called Harbinger, and it's coming out with the big trove chest style thing. And then they're kind of moving on from Cloud Spire as an IP. They're going to still keep producing and selling it, but there's no new IP. My deepest hope is they do the same thing with Burn Cycle, because I've got a lot of Burn Cycle and it doesn't all fit in the main box. And I would love, 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 love for their next big campaign. Oh, Carlson Brothers, please. I know you're not listeners, but listen, like, look, I'm praying to the Chip Theory gods. I would love for them to do another thing like they've done with Harbinger and just go, bam, here is the Burn Cycle finale. Here's the new campaign. Here's the new bits that are going with it. And here's the great big cube that goes in your Kallax, because the Trove Chest for Too Many Bones is a sensational bit of storage. It is not an insert, it's an outsert. It fills a whole Kallax cube and it is spectacular. I can't wait for the Cloud Spire one to arrive. And I'm just deeply hopeful that they do the same thing with Burn Cycle. I can't wait. Chip Theory Games, Elder Scrolls. One final little footnote on the games that were, because, man, there were a few yesterday? What the hell day is it today? Today's Sunday. Yes, Friday night. Man, all the days blade. Adulting sucks. One star. Do not recommend. Right, all the days blade. Friday night. We don't often do night gaming, but we're just in the mood, and Super Troopers girls were out doing something, and he's like, oh, you free for game Friday night? I'm like, oh, maybe. Had a big week. I'm an adult. I'm 51. I'm pretty fucking tired. But yeah, let's do it. So Super Troopers came over and we played Ark Nova, which is the game I think that we have played. I think we worked out Friday night. This was our 19th game together. Ark Nova, we played with the new maps, Map Pack 2. So we played with the new maps. Loved the new maps. We had so much fun with the new maps. Even on the games I've played of Ark Nova where I have lost phenomenally. And as you know, said before, there was a game I played where just the card play and whatever, I think I ended up with one chameleon. That's all I had in my... I think there was more, but I only had one chameleon for like the whole first two-thirds of the game. It was the shittest zoo that people have ever been to. There's just one chameleon sitting in a cage. Even then, I still had fun playing the game. And this was our closest game ever. I think there was only 2 points in this game, which is remarkable because Ark Nova is usually sort of a 10-point game. Sometimes a little more, 12 points, 8 points. This was 2 points. There was 2 points in it, and it was fantastic. Had a great game. Zoom map Pack 2. Love it. Love Ark Nova. Looking forward to seeing what they do with their 3-edition campaign that's coming out. I hope they still go live with that. I've seen some of the pre-samples that they've posted, some of the renders for some of the tiles. I'm like, maybe. I don't know if it's going to make it a better game. I'm still holding out for, you know, overlays for the player boards that stop everything from shifting around. But whatever. We'll see. We'll wait and see. Ark Nova, love, love, love. Boxes on the doorstep, new delights inside. Heaven's on fire, fields to divide. Strategy and dice, bring the night alive. Incoming thrill, no need. This week on Incoming! ! There's not a ton, but there is a bit. Obviously, it was my birthday recently, and the boys spoiled me rotten. They bought me 2 games, which is ridiculous that they would do such a thing, because they're not... The guys don't give me little games. You know, these are big, chunky, meaty games, and so delighted to see them. One was Sancore, which is I think by the same designer as Merv. It's got, you know, tool art. The box is about 8 kilos. It's like a 4.9998 on BGG for weight. Not really, but it's up there. It looks fantastic. It looks absolutely fantastic. And the other one that I got for my birthday was Tabanusi, which is one of the tea games by Board and Dice. The tea games, I think we have most of them in our circle of friends now. You know, Teotihuacan and Tiletum. And we don't have Trismegistus, which is going to be relaunched this week. Not this week, next month. Trismegistus by Board and Dice is being relaunched. And there's a new one coming out this year that's been designed by David Turtsey. So looking very closely at that one to see what's coming. I think the only two I've played with any consistency is Teotihuacan and Tekenu. And really like both of those. Obviously really like both of those games. Very much looking forward to playing Tabanusi. Tabanusi looks, again, like a very heavy game. And Sankori looks gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous on the table. And I can't wait to play both of those. Dragon Eclipse is delivered in Australia. Now, I didn't back Dragon Eclipse, but I did win a copy. And that's like the big mini standy monster battler. It's kind of like 3D Pokemon on the table. Don't know much about it, but thanks to Board Game Revolution, the team there, I actually entered a draw and I won a copy of that. So that's delivering soon. And finally pulled the trigger on two games that have been sitting in my Amazon cart forever because they both sort of were a little bit cheaper this week. Five Tribes is on the way. I bought a copy of Five Tribes. I can't wait to play Five Tribes. The gameplay looks fantastic. Five Tribes is not a new game. It's been around for a while, but it's one that I basically sort of threw in my Amazon cart 6-8 weeks ago and just thought, well, I'll just see what happens. And it's the cheapest it's been in ages. I think it was less than $60, which in Australia is a bargain, right? $60 is shipping in Australia. I mean, not really, but games are very expensive in Australia, you know, and I think for those of you that are living in tariff land, you're probably going to be feeling a bit of that pinch, at least in the short term, until the world works out what's happening. But games are very expensive. So to get a game of that caliber for less than $60 is insane not to. And the other one I pulled the trigger on is I'm all in for Deceased, the CMON crowdfunding campaign. And I've been, you know, I guess itching for it. You know, obviously there's going to be, we're going to talk a little bit in Voices in My Head about some of this stuff. But how and when and whether it delivers this year, I was kind of itching for it. And so I bought Deceased Gotham City Outbreak, which was their retail release. And they released that after the campaign. It's not a part of the campaign, as in Gotham City Outbreak is not part of the crowdfunding campaign. It's kind of their small box retail version. And it's basically Deceit. It's basically Zombicide, but you are all the villains breaking out of Arkham. It's again, it's one scenario, but it's going to tickle that bone for me. I started reading the Deceased graphic novels last night, which I bought last year at PAX. They were on sale. I bought them at PAX. I bought all five. That's the box set. So I started reading those to get excited. Finished book one last night. It's excellent. And so Deceased Gotham City Outbreak is on its way, and we'll get that to the table. I really like Zombicide. Zombicide is silly fun. It's a little bit like Cthulhu Death May Die. It's, you know, you're rolling dice and you're running around, you're kicking doors down, and you're shooting zombies in the head. It's fun. I actually really like it. And you can play it four-handed. It's breezy enough you can play it four-handed. So those are on the way. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games on the way. And that's it for incoming. FOMO MOFO, we're not going to cover this week because, one, I've got a lot to talk about. We're at the 50-minute mark already and I haven't even gotten the voices in my head. But two, ooh, it's a tough space in crowdfunding. So instead, we're going to go straight to this week in Voices in My Head, I want to talk about a new kind of FOMO. So FOMO, I guess, clappers, everyone, if you're listening, you know FOMO's fear of missing out. FOMO MOFO is our regular segment because I am the fear of missing out mother burp fucker because I love, you know, crowdfunding and getting excited and ordering things and waiting. And I, you know, I hate waiting, but I love waiting. You know, when you watch things get built and you, following the updates, the releases, and the press releases, and the commentary, and the stories of the game being built. I love that. I love watching it unfold. It gives me exceptional joy to watch all these things unfold. Right now, obviously, in the world of board gaming, we've got Captain Cheeto in the United States, and I don't mean any disrespect to the United States, guys. Like, you're a huge country, and you're a huge force to be working with in the world. This is not meant to be... It's just a bit of light fun and play. But Captain Cheeto, who is swinging dicks with the world on tariffs right now, are there tariffs? Won't there be tariffs? By the way, China, it's now... I mean, next week it'll be a 400% tariff. And, you know, tariffs... this is not a tariff commentary. I don't want to talk about tariffs in detail. But these tariffs, which Donald Trump is enforcing with China, have the very real capability of impacting all of us around the world in board games. Now, let me couch all this with first world problems. And it is first world problems, right? Board games are a luxury item, right? They're not feeding my children. I'm not living in them, I'm not living under them. Although in the bunker, I probably could build a shelter out of board games. What's going on right now between the US and China, there's going to be a spillover of some sort. And unless you've been living under a rock, everyone listening all knows exactly what I'm talking about. So these tariffs have a very real impact in that while the tariffs only impact games going into the United States, every game produced in the world now has to look at their global economy from a completely different vantage point. Now, there's some really great commentary out there. If you haven't been following it, hop on and look for Jamie Stegmaier of Stonemaier Games. He's released a couple of really great statements. When I say statements, they're more like articles. He runs a very transparent game about his business and the board gaming industry. And he's written some exceptional articles unpicking the math of these tariffs and what it means to his company in particular, and what it likely means to other companies. And exceptional. And I'm not going to just regurgitate things he said. You know, that's not what I'm here for. But if you haven't and you're interested, there's some really good stuff there. There's a couple of great articles on BoardGameGeek which collate responses from multiple game designers. And there's a really, really good one. It's on the front page. You can't miss it. Which collates responses from about 20 different designers, developers, and publishers, but doesn't name them. It just says, these are the comments I've gotten from a publisher in Canada or a publisher in Europe or a publisher in whatever the case is, and just collates their thoughts in one place. And I have to be honest, you know, if I was in any sort of manufacturing globally anywhere, this would be terrifying. But I'm just going to talk about it from a board game standpoint because that's how it affects me. So tariffs. All right. So what this means is anything, and again, I'm going to imagine that there's somebody listening has no idea what I'm talking about, right? Tariffs, what it means is anything that goes from China to the United States is subject to a tax when it lands in the United States. And that tax is paid by the person who's bringing it in. So the company that's bringing their stuff in, they might have manufactured it in China. When it lands at the port, they're going to have to pay a tax to the government based on the cost price, the cost value of that good. Right now, currently, that tax from China to the US is 145%. So if you are a company that has produced a game, has spent the last 2 years producing a game, and it happened to be on the water when Dr. Cheeto announced 145% tariff, you're probably not sleeping very well right now. Because once that game lands, once your shipping container lands in the United States, you are going to have to pay 145% of the value of that game to the US government in order to land it. There is no one who has that kind of slush in their business. Now, I've never run an import, export, or a manufacturing business, but I have run many businesses in my time. Hospitality businesses, restaurants, caterers. I had a couple of restaurants myself. And no one has that kind of slush in their budget. Even if your game is only selling for $15, right? And the general math in board games is that your board game is going to be sold for five times its price to make. That's the general math. So if you're selling a game for $15, your game's only cost you $3 to make. You now have to give $4.50 to the government. Okay? You've paid $3 for your game and you have to give $4.50 to the government. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot of money, but if your game's only $3, you're not making a lot per game. No one has this. No one has this in the bank. No one has this sitting around waiting to be spent. And the companies that just happen to have the bad luck of having their game on the water when the announcement was made are the ones that are going to suffer. Because you can't turn the boat around. Once it lands, you're stuffed. So they are stuck with A, not paying it, flushing all the money down the toilet, dumping the games. B, going to all of their backers in the United States, potentially globally, and saying, guys, I need another $4.50. Now, that's $4.50 on a $15 game. If you've bought a $500 game, right, the cost of that is going to be $100, you're going to be asking for another $150 from all your backers. So, and that's, to be honest, if I was a producer and a manufacturer, that is the only course I would take. I'm running a business. I would be going to my customers going, guys, as much as I would love to absorb this, I cannot. This company cannot. Most board games, I mean, margins are tiny. And unless you're a Stonemaier game or even an Awakened Realms where you've got millions and millions of dollars in ongoing revenue and turnover, you don't have the ability to weather this storm. Because really, it could be a very short storm. It could be just what's on the water now. Right, because one of the potential responses is, well, my games aren't shipping until we work out what the fuck is going on. So the guys that have games on the water are the ones that are going to hurt because they're going to land and they have a very, very short time to make a decision. If it was me, it would be, guys, I am sorry to say, but this game has landed. If you want your game, I need more money from you. That's not their fault. If I had a game delivering, and even though I'm in Australia, a lot of games, you know, they will ship to the US first. Not a lot, but there's a portion of them. They will ship to the US first before they're shipped globally. I have a sneaking suspicion that CMON does this with some games. Probably not to Australia, but certainly if you're in Canada, Canadians are going to get stung with this because currently a lot of companies in the States will ship to the States, then on ship to Canada. So if you're in Canada, you're also getting fucked with these tariffs. As a gamer, if a company came to me and said, I am very sorry. This is the situation. And in order for us to get you this game, this is what we need. Hand on heart. Here you go, guys. It's not your fault. It is this. If that game was being ordered right now today, it would have this increased price on it. The problem is there's no control in the hands of the people who are importing these games or have made these games. So game producers out there, if you come to me and you say, regrettably, even though you're in Australia, our games come through the US. If you want this game, we are going to have to charge you another $100. Hey, man, I'm going to pay it. I'm going to pay it because, not just because I want the game, I've been a businessman, okay? And it is not your fault. I'm in a food business, been in hospitality. If the cost of chicken triples, and it did 1 year in Australia, the cost of chicken doubled overnight, and I had to go to my customers and go, guys, we're either not serving chicken or I'm charging you double. And there's nothing I could do about it. I couldn't absorb that. And so there was, I think, a 4 week period or 5 week period. We just didn't serve chicken. We couldn't do it. We couldn't afford to do it. It's ridiculous, but that was the case. So if any of the games that I'm expecting coming, and there are a lot of them, happen to go through the US, and the company comes to me with hand on heart and says, guys, Hammers, I need another $80 to deliver your game. That's not going to the game designer. That's not going to the developer. That's not going to the publisher. That's going to the US government. They can't control that. I can't tell you what to do, clappers out there, if you are in freedom land and you're going to get hit with tariffs. I can't tell you what to do, but I can just say, try not to take it out on these guys. It's not their fault, right? I know plenty of companies have come out and said, we're not going to charge you. 401 Games, for example, which is a game distributor and company in Canada, has come out and said, if you have a pre-order with us, we are not going to charge you. We're going to absorb this in the short term, and good on them, right? You know, it's a wonderful thing if they can do that. If a game is going through the US at all, even if you're not in the US, you're going to get slugged with this surcharge. So those designers and developers and distributors that have games on the water, they're the ones getting fisted because this was a surprise, motherfucker. And it's only going to get worse. If you're following what's happening, I watched a really great interview with the head of trade in China from a US journalist who was asking some questions and said to the head of trade, well, you're in a bad position. You really need the US, don't you? And he went, well no, we don't. The US is only 15% of our output, right? It's a big world. Fill your boots. He basically said, be our guest. Put your tariffs up as far as you like. And he was very calm. He wasn't inflammatory. He wasn't aggressive. The reporter was a bit of a douche. She wasn't very nice, and it looked like she was trying to get a rise out of him. And he was very calm. He just said, "China's been around 5,000 years, lady. We will be fine." And my honest thinking, I'm not an economist, but my honest thinking is that in 6 weeks' time or 8 weeks' time, this isn't going to be a thing, right? You can only go so far. And if China's willing to call the bluff every time it goes, China can bankrupt the United States if they want to. They're not going to, but they could if they wanted to. They own, a huge amount of U.S. bonds. They could if they want. Again, I'm not an economist. Let's get out of that space. But, for me, I think this is a really interesting space because this affects all of us. So some of the other responses from big companies, Hexplorit, who has a couple of campaigns out, basically made an announcement the other day, and I deeply respect this, and said, "Look, guys, we are freezing refunds. Okay, if you want a refund, we respect that. We have a refund policy, but this is a force majeure. This is an event that is outside our control. We are freezing refunds. So just bear with us. We're not saying you can't have a refund, but we're freezing refunds at this point until we get clarity around what's going on." I think that's brave and bold and a really good move. They're not saying we want more money. They're saying, please don't come to us for a refund right now because that will cripple our business. We're not doing it. We will reopen refunds potentially once we have a greater understanding of the impact. Earthborn Rangers, I can't remember who made Earthborn Rangers, but it's a company that is, I think, European-based. They opted because their big underpinning business mantra is sustainability, sustainability, sustainability. So Earthborn Rangers is being regionally produced. Now, I think because of the way they produce and because their whole game is largely card-based, they were able to do so. So they are actually producing the games in the United States and in Europe and shipping from there. So they put a statement out the other day saying, please note, these tariffs do not affect us. They won't affect your game. They won't affect our distribution model. They won't affect anything. And high five. Obviously that doesn't work for all games because even if you have to buy components in from China, you have to buy cardstock, you have to buy, your paper, you have to buy pieces for your tools and your dies, whatever the case is, there's going to be tariffs on all that stuff. So Earthborn Rangers, I'm sorry I don't have the details with me, but they made a statement that they're saying, we're all good, it's all good. Now, I think, to be honest, in Australia, by and large, this isn't going to affect the cost of our games. We're the first stop from China usually, okay? We're only a 2-week sale from China, so it is exceedingly rare that games go from us into the United States, from China to the United States and back to Australia. I mean, that would be an insane shipping model. So we're not impacted by the tariffs directly. This could impact us indirectly, though, because it would be a very easy move for big companies, small companies, and companies all over the place to when they're launching a new crowdfunding model, to go, look, we're just going to build $10 more into everybody and suck it, right? We're going to build $10 more. They'll have to do some weighted math on what percentage of their anticipated sales are in the United States. And they can just go, right, okay, it's a new world order, guys. This game's $10 more, or this game is $80 more, whatever it is, right? Something like Enormity, which is $700. They'll go, well, your game's $100 more. Now, Enormity's coming out of China. They're based in Europe. I don't want to go on a, I'm going to wind that back. I'm not going to go through a case-by-case model on everyone who's shipping games. But it's not likely to affect us directly, as in the tariffs on imports into the United States are not going to affect us here in Australia directly. It's not going to affect you in Europe. It's not going to affect you in Asia. If you're in North America, though, I know there's a lot of the shipments that go to South America or that are going into sort of Mexico or they're going into those sorts of parts of the world, certainly that are going into Canada, it's not often that a game ships directly into Vancouver. It does happen. And I actually think it's going to happen a lot more. The companies are going to decide if they've previously been shipping into the United States, they're going to go, well, stuff this. We're going to pay to send a separate container to Canada because while that initiates a branching distribution model, which comes with costs, we can pass those costs on, but those costs are going to be much, much less than possibly 145% tariff. And let's just asterisk that by saying this may not even be an issue in 3 months. It may not. This may be a flash in the pan where everybody's swinging dicks and beating their chest, and then in 3 months they go, right, okay, we've renegotiated, we're settled down, and the tariffs aren't a thing. The threat of these tariffs now is always going to be there from the United States, unfortunately. And I think some of the interesting statements from around the world, and I'm not going to get into them again piece by piece, but there's a lot of countries in the world have said, we can't trust the United States government. We've been allies for 120 years, and now we can't trust the stability of our future together. And that's a horrible position to be in. Like, you know, whether it's your next door neighbor, whether it's a work colleague, or whether it's a country that you've been working hand in hand with for 100 years, to not be able to trust what they're saying and move forward on that understanding. I mean, to just throw out the North America Free Trade Agreement and go, this is gone. See ya. Here's tariffs, Canada. I mean, okay. Okay, man. But, like, you sure? You sure this is how, like, you sure? This is what you want to do? I'm not judging. I'm just saying, man, like, it's a new world order. And so I think crowdfunding campaigns are going to look very different from today. And I think in, you know, 2 to 5 years, there's going to be the world before this tariff explosion and the world after this tariff explosion. I think the easiest move forward is going to be a lot more fine print. Guys, this is the price. However, please note we have the right to amend your price in future due to global volatility, whatever the case is. I think, you know, Jamie Stegmaier, one of the comments he made in one of his articles was, I think we're going to see a lot more companies moving away from retail into crowdfunding. Retail relies on a geographically centralized distribution model, all games coming into a country, all games going out to different spaces. Whereas crowdfunding, you can actually unpick, well, only 36% of my games are going to the United States. And they go to the United States, and then they are being distributed in the United States, and we can send these direct to Canada, we can send these direct to Australia, New Zealand, these direct. And so I think, and I think there's sense in that, that there'll be more games that will just go to crowdfunding, that they won't go to retail at all. You know, and that's not a terrible thing, because it means that some games are going to become more special by nature. It's not about, you know, the FOMO of, well, it's never going to be printed again. But when things are going to crowdfunding and you know they're not going to retail, well, that can impact decisions. That may drive more sales to crowdfunding, which is good for game designers and distributors. Some interesting bits of agility in the game market. GameFund announced recently that they're fast-tracking region-specific pricing. As a, you know, a designer and distributor in crowdfunding on GameFund, you'll be able to charge more for games going to the United States. Several game campaigns have announced they've been shelved. They're just going, nope, we were about to launch, but please note, we're not about to. Now we're going to just hold it. And I think there's sense in that. You know, if you're not desperately needing the capital to move forward as a company, why would you right now? Right? And I think that there's a lot of companies out there, and I'm not going to necessarily name names on these, Simon, that are probably using campaigns as a forward momentum. We'll talk a little bit about CMON in detail in a minute. But I think most companies, you know, most games that are on GameFound and Kickstarter are done by a guy who's been working on the game for 10 years and wants to bring his game to people. And he spent the last 10 years of his life making this game. And he wants you to play this game. Now, why would you launch it now when you have no idea what your future is going to look like? And I think there's sense in just going, right, we were set to launch on April 21st. We are not. Watch this space. That's good for everyone because it means we're going to get clarity around it. Large companies like Mindclash, Awakened Realms, you know, Mindclash is about to launch Trismegistus, and they've just said, look, we're still going ahead. I can absolutely guarantee that they have completely reworked their modeling for their pricing for this up-and-coming campaign. And I have no doubt that this Board and Dice, Trismegistus, I have no doubt, so that's not Mindclash. Why did I say Mindclash? This Board and Dice. I have no doubt that Board and Dice will deliver, none whatsoever. They're a big company. They've been around a long time. They're stable. Their sales are split between crowdfunding and retail. And I have no doubt that they will do well out of this and come out all right. Awakened Realms. Awakened Realms has $100 bazillion in campaigns in the works. CMON's the same. CMON, I think, has 16 undelivered campaigns. Now, some of those are pre-orders, obviously, but we're talking about millions upon millions of dollars that are already in the works. They're already in progress. The simplest thing for these guys is, hey, we're still going ahead. They're just not going to deliver. As in, I don't mean ever, as in, even if the game's done, it's going to be far more sensible for them to park that in a warehouse, and just let it sit there until they know they've got 120 days of surety. 120 days of knowing they can get wherever they need to go in the world, or at least to the US. Because I think from China to the US is about 8-9 weeks by sea. So they're going to need at least 12 weeks of, well, I know nothing's happening for 12 weeks. Let's get it on the boat. And that's sensible too. Look, CMON, there's a lot of talk about CMON. I don't want to shit on CMON. CMON makes really fun games, right? I love Cthulhu Death May Die. I don't own a lot of CMON games, but I am all in on Deceased. So, you know, I don't think CMON is in the news because they announced that their 2024 earnings were down by $2 million. I think they called it a $2 million loss, but I actually think that's actually represented as earnings were down by $2 million. I don't think it was a $2 million net loss. We don't know because their financials aren't published right now. And so their trading has been frozen. And everyone's up in arms going, oh, trading's been frozen. Trading freezes all the time for public companies, guys. It freezes all the time for a number of reasons. And the reason their trading's been frozen is because their financials hadn't been released yet. They're based in Singapore. The Fox works in the financial world. And I can tell you that the financial world of Singapore is such that if you've missed signing a page on something, they send you back to the beginning to start again. So the fact their financials aren't released doesn't necessarily mean anything onerous for CMON. For them to have 16... And if I've got the number wrong, guys, I'm not trying to shit on CMON, but if they've got 16 undelivered campaigns and pre-orders, that's a tough space to be in because they've got to get those games into the hands of people eventually. And, you know, a lot of those games will go to the United States. Now, the good news is that once the games are done, what they can do is they can ship them to the rest of the world, and they're going to need to build confidence, because I think one of the best things that any company can do right now is build confidence in your buyers. For me, you know, I'm at a crossroads here in that they've got a great campaign, a great looking campaign out for a game right now called The Adventurers. It's a pre-order, not a crowdfunding campaign. So it's a slightly different scenario. It's a game they've already in development. They're already in you know, late stages of pre-production, that sort of thing. Will it deliver? Probably. The tricky bit is, what do we do? We're the buyers, we're the end users, and what do we do? And I guess I'm gonna bookend this at the end, but what am I going to do? And so I have spent a lot of time unpicking my own thoughts on this and where I sit with this. And here's the thing. We've had a very, very good run as board gamers. And when I say very good run, I mean an exceptionally good run. I can only think of one game that I backed that didn't deliver. And it was before I even really got into modern board gaming. I backed a game 5 or 6 years ago. And this is before I was playing with Super Trooper and the boys and I got brought into things like Terraforming Mars and all the wonderful world of Anachrony and whatever else. I backed a game and it wasn't hugely expensive. It was like $200. And then the guy just disappeared. He disappeared with the money. It's done. You had the updates. Here's the models. Here's the proofs, it's all looking good, and then phew, gone. The dude was gone. I'm like, okay, well, that kind of sucks, but this is crowdfunding. Nothing's guaranteed, right? And we've had I have backed over 50 projects in the last 5 years, and that's the only one that has not delivered. The only one. Now, crowdfunding came about to bring things to life that wouldn't otherwise come to life. Now, you can argue that that's not the case now, that it's a pre-order system for guys like Awakened Realms and CMON and Mind Clash and whatever else, and sure. But there are still hundreds upon hundreds of games that hit these platforms every single month and every single year of people who have built something in their garage and they want to bring it to life for you and they want you to enjoy it. You know, the designer who did Distilled, which was a huge hit, he's about to deliver Luthier, and I think he's one that's got Luthier on the water. And he's like, Luthier was a $900,000 campaign or something. And he's come out and said, these tariffs could end it. It could literally just end it. It could be over, right? That would be it. And that's awful. Because while I haven't played Distilled, people who have played Distilled absolutely adore Distilled. And Luthier looks like a beautiful second foray. It looks like a beautiful step into games. I didn't back it. It's not my style of game. as in, you know, the theme didn't do it for me, and it was, you know, really quite expensive, which I don't have a problem with, but when the theme doesn't do it for me, anyway, I didn't back it. But a lot of people did. And my understanding is it's on the water. And the gentleman who created this game, literally in his garage, is now in a position where it is going to break him. Crowdfunding, full circle back, came about for people like that. For people like me to connect with people like that to bring projects to life. And I think that is possibly where crowdfunding is going to circle back to, where, you know, we're going to be taking a gamble and we're going to be gambling a little bit because the future is uncertain. As I said, we've been blessed with years and years and years of stability and games delivering. And if a game doesn't deliver, you know, the instances like Mythic Games or whatever are very few and far between. And it may be now that it's just a little bit more of a roll of the dice as to whether a game's going to deliver or not. And I can put a hand on heart and say I'm okay with that. Because if I don't continue, okay, and this is my stance only, but this is where I've come to. I'm a regular backer of crowdfunding. I think I have 17 projects that are in progress. I love the process. I love getting these bespoke little things that maybe aren't even going to retail. I love getting the big whiz bang things. As I said, I'm all in for Deceased. I'm all in for Enormity. I don't know that I'm all in for things like Revenant, which is a Mind Clash game. And I have no doubt that, you know, those sorts of things will deliver, and they may deliver under slightly different circumstances when they come. And if any of these publishers come to me and say, look, because of our business model, these certain things are routed through the United States, there's an increased cost for us to get you your game. I don't think there'll be many for me personally, but if they did, okay, you're running a business, here's the extra money you need. But if I stop backing, okay, if I sit here and I go, well, I'm going to now circle the wagons around my wallet and I stop backing and I go, well, I'm going to wait. There are campaigns that are going live tomorrow. There are campaigns that are going live next week. If I do that, I become another instability for these people trying to run a business. I become another source of uncertainty. I become another bit of angst. I am the buyer who, well, are people going to buy? Are they not going to buy? I've run a business. The last thing people need is more uncertainty. So for me personally, I've made the decision just last night and this morning, you know, after having good chats, you know, online with my friends and seeing what's about, that I am going to continue. And if that's a little bit more of a gamble, that I am okay with that. Because if I don't, then I'm actually going to become part of the challenges for these companies. I won't go so far as to say I'm part of the problem. I'm not a problem. You can choose to spend your money and not spend your money. That is absolutely up to you. Every one of us makes that decision every single day. But I have a habit of being involved in game campaigns, and I've decided that if there's a campaign that I like the looks of, I will be backing at a level that I'm comfortable backing, knowing that there is a chance that this may not come to fruition. And I'm going to be okay with that. That's me. That's my stance, Clappers. And whatever stance you have, you know, I respect that. It's, you know, money is important. We all need money to live. And I'm lucky enough to have a certain amount of disposable income. And for me to be able to say, I am not going to be an uncertainty for you, the producer. You know, I'm looking at things like Pest by Arcona, which is version 2. I hadn't paid for my pledge yet. Unless they announce that they're not delivering between now and when I choose to pay, I will continue to. I'm not holding off for any reason other than I'm just waiting for the updates to come, till a point. And did the same thing with the first version, and I will likely pledge for them. They've got another campaign out. They've got Philharmonics, which is in the works, and they've got another one that just finished called, I think, the Great Library, the Great Harbor, and good on them. They're a small producer. They're in the Mediterranean somewhere. They're nice guys. They're passionate gamers. They don't run massive campaigns. And if I stop backing, then I am part of the challenges that they will face as a business. And that's the death knell for any business. So that's me. That's where it leaves me. Clappers, I don't know where it leaves you. Good luck. Good luck to you. It's like saddle up and good luck. It's a wild ride, you know, and who knows? As I said, in 3 months, these could be a non-issue, but that uncertainty will always be there, unfortunately. And that's the voices in my head, man. They go round and round in a circle. This week's clap, we're going to send a clap out to the New York Times. I'm a subscriber of the New York Times, guys. I don't often read the news or journalism or anything because it is so depressing, right? And the news outlets we have here in Australia, it's just clickbait garbage. It's so rough. It really is. I often would get my news from CNN, which I find very balanced. But the New York Times is, I've been a subscriber of the New York Times for quite some time. They do great podcasts. They have one called The Daily where they every single day they do a half hour, which is a wrap up of some big issue that's going on. And they have been incredibly fair and balanced in all their coverage of this stuff. Every time there's something that happens, they're not coming with exclamation marks or going, oh God, it's the end of the world. They go, hey, this is what's happening. This is what you need to know. And this is how it could impact you no matter where you are in the world. And it's hard to find good journalism. I don't get sponsored by the New York Times. I don't get sponsored by anybody, right? This is my opinion. But my clap this week, it's a big one. It goes out to the New York Times because their journalistic integrity and their coverage has been exceptional. And I'm very grateful to that. So a huge one, New York Times. And that concludes this week's therapy session. Thank you, OMC crew, for smiling and nodding while I share the trials and tribulations of my first world problems. This week's episode has been brought to you by Salad. Yes, Salad. When you're 51, you spend 12 days at a swim-up bar in Fiji. It seems that Salad is your best friggin' friend for the foreseeable future. And I hate my bathroom scale. Next week is Easter, 4 days of ham and games. And it also marks 6 months since OMC launched. Yay me. You can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. Email wonmanclapping@gmail.com. You get Instagram at @onethenumberManClapping. Very special guest coming this month. I'm going to be interviewing the team at So Very Wrong About Games. As part of my Not All Heroes Wear Cape series. I'm very excited to finally have a chat with them. That will be coming up at the end of the month. And I have another cluster of fantastic guests lined up for May. So it's fun times. You can help OMC by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram. Leave a review on whatever platform you choose. If it's a bad one, I'm a chef and a father of 3 daughters. I can take it. I get bad reviews all the time. Dad, you're so shit. That's okay. I'm good. Thanks as always for your time. Your time is precious. And the fact that you choose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself, because research shows that masturbating 21 times a month extends your lifespan significantly. I'm not even making this shit up. Some more solo gaming peeps. Peace out, mofos. Coming soon, Tariff the Minigame.